Welcome to All Things New Orleans, WWNO's weekly radio magazine. Your trusty Captain Jack has handed me, Jesse Hardman, the microphone for the week, and I promised him I'd do my very best to uphold the Hopke Gold Standard. We've got a great show this week. You'll hear from NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune's Brett Anderson, with an important story about mental health and post-Katrina life in St. Bernard Parish. Eve Abrams helps us explore some often used but misunderstood labels being placed on New Orleanians who arrived after the storm. And we take a boat ride with the Bayou Woman. Wetlands guide Wendy Billiott gives us a tour of what's left of her Terrebonne Parish paradise. Stay tuned. First up on our show today, we're going to take a look at a seven-letter word getting used pretty liberally around New Orleans these days. That's right, hipster. Ugh, I shudder at the sound. Wait, does that include me? Can I get a ruling on this? Lane Kaplan-Levinson, you out there? Calling all millennials, please tweet at WWNO with your definitions of the word hipster. Last month, when actor Wendell Pierce's plans for redeveloping a blighted property were rebuffed by the Faubourg Marigny Improvement Association, he tweeted, "Not hipster enough? Gentrification." In May, vandals defaced the gussied-up new incarnation of the St. Rock Market, spray-painting yuppie equals bad and breaking all the windows. The fear is that post-Katrina New Orleans is losing something essential, something from pre-Katrina New Orleans. Eve Abrams examines what else we're saying when we use these words.
This past carnival, Crew de Vue night, there was one sign that got a lot of attention. You may have seen it. Hipsters go home.
People came out of the crowd and into the street to shake my hand and say, "Thank you for saying that." But I really don't know who hipsters are. I knew they were supposed to be responsible for a lot of problems.
This is Henry Fulce, maker of the sign, proud member of Crew de Vue since its founding.
I'm a 70-year-old native-born New Orleanian.
And a retired Loyola philosophy professor. Fulce says his idea for the sign came from his sub-crew's theme, Bulldozing for Change, and its suggestion that change was being spurred by hipsters, whoever they are. He intentionally played on the famous phrase, "Yankee go home," which suggests a foreign intrusion. Fulce says many newcomers adapt smoothly and naturally to New Orleans values, while others never do. People who like old things and feel at home in a state of semi-disrepair, likely in a great well. But for people who move here with expectations that don't match what New Orleans offers, sometimes they try and change things.
I think the thing about Henry's hipster go home sign is that a lot of young people come to New Orleans and they say, "Well, this is really cool, but it needs more coffee shops," or "it needs things that they want in their lives." And that is what is making New Orleans change a little too quickly.
This is Joan Fulce, Henry's wife, and also a member of Crew de Vue. This quickness is entirely post-Katrina, she says, because of the way it brought people here.
Hordes of spring break volunteers. Instead of going to the beach, people would come to New Orleans and gut houses. And a lot of them discovered New Orleans because of that. They would gut houses and then they'd go party in the French Quarter at night and hear music and eat food, even the year after Katrina. I mean, it was still such a cool place.
Author and filmmaker Rebecca Snedeker grew up in New Orleans and moved right back after college in the mid-90s. It wasn't a popular choice at the time.
I had been taught that if I wanted to do anything with my life, I had to get out.
Having come back and stayed in her hometown, Snedeker says she's grateful when people choose it, bringing their different ideas, questions, and artistic practices. She says newcomers help her see things she considers normal with fresh eyes. Besides, people have been coming and going since there's been a New Orleans.
Certainly I feel territorial sometimes, like sometimes that crops up, but the thing I always go back to, whether I'm thinking about how people visited New Orleans or even like disaster voyeurism and tourism, I always go back to this place of like people may be doing it imperfectly, but what if no one came?
Change is good. Can't stay the same. So, I mean, you got to adjust to the new things around you. Simple.
Myron Clark works at the St. Rock Market. He was in the back, baking bread pudding and cinnamon rolls the night the windows were smashed and yuppie equals bad was spray-painted on the building. He ran out to see what the noise was.
I just seen all the glass broken. Me being the way I am, I ran back in there and started hiding.
Clark called the police, and then, even though he was scared, saved his cinnamon rolls from burning. He thinks the message was to get out of the neighborhood, but Clark says the city's going in the right direction, and he's grateful for his job. So is Harrison Carnes, a barista in the market at Coast Roast, who recently moved here from Seattle.
Yuppie. It's interesting that they use that, because to me, yuppie is like an antiquated word. Think about like a New York stockbroker. I was kind of expecting just something like maybe more contemporary or obvious, like hipsters.
People like the idea of a scapegoat. They like the idea of blaming problems on some labeled group of people, and hipsters do as well as anything.
Again, sign maker Henry Fulce, who points out hipster isn't an ethnic or religious slur.
Maybe that's why we invent these labels, because other labels that were used by humor in the past are now no longer eligible, and so now we have to have new labels to create groups that we can make fun of.
So that when we're upset or anxious, instead of busting a window, we can laugh. For WWNO, I'm Eve Abrams.
Next, in keeping with our Thursday tradition this summer, we've got the latest installment of our podcast, Katrina the Debris. The devastation of Hurricane Katrina and the floods is most visible in pictures of ruined houses and people's destroyed possessions lying out on city streets. But there's unseen damage that runs even deeper, the collective emotional trauma experienced by the thousands of people who lived through it. A Centers for Disease Control and Prevention survey of New Orleanians who returned to the city says 50% of respondents showed a need for mental health assistance. Another survey of families who wound up in FEMA trailers showed high rates of disability due to depression and anxiety.
No one can deny that trauma still lives in much of our community. The 10-year anniversary, I feel, is going to trigger responses in a lot of people.
Charlotte Parent is the director of health for the city of New Orleans. She's overseeing an effort to improve mental health services in New Orleans schools. Katrina was the catalyst for addressing mental health, but now there's a new focus.
Trauma in New Orleans is not an unusual thing. So you had the one issue of Katrina, which we're moving away from, but we still have violence.
Project Fleur-de-Lis is an organization that provides mental health support and counseling to schools in New Orleans. It began right after Katrina as a way to bring mental health services to children who'd experienced trauma during the disaster. Beth Cooney oversees Project Fleur-de-Lis programs.
Now we still have kids that have experienced Katrina as their main trauma. We have kids that were floating on doors in the Ninth Ward here. We hear their stories and they'll remember they were 4 or 5 and they remember it. And they say that was the one that, you know, they'll have tons of experiences, but they'll say that's the one that bothers them the most.
But as Katrina becomes a distant memory, Project Fleur-de-Lis has shifted its focus to helping kids cope with violence in their communities.
The traumas that we see is the loss of somebody that they love. And for them, it's, you know, my brother was shot. The community violence that we see on TV and we hear about, we treat those kids. You know, we had a parade here where there was big shooting, and, you know, we're still treating kids that were at that parade.
While New Orleans took the spotlight post-Katrina, it wasn't the only part of Louisiana impacted by the storm. It arguably wasn't even the hardest hit. Next door, St. Bernard Parish was completely devastated by Katrina-related flooding. This more rural population struggled for years to get their communities back. And during that trying process, residents had to deal with the depression and mental health issues that are part and parcel of disaster recovery. Brad Anderson brings us this story of the St. Bernardians who refused to ignore the wounds Hurricane Katrina left on the psyches of their families and their neighbors.
When Donna Barber evacuated her home in St. Bernard Parish with her family before Katrina, she didn't plan to stay gone. In fact, she only brought a change of clothes for 2 days.
When we started getting the reports of the riot in New Orleans and stories of the water and the dead bodies and stuff like that, that just kind of flipped our worlds. I mean, we didn't have money, we didn't know what we were going to do and how we were going to survive, and we were kind of living day by day.
Barbara's a longtime resident of St. Bernard. She's recounting what it was like to watch news coverage of Hurricane Katrina from a hotel room in Panama City, Florida. That's where she evacuated with her 4 children and a coworker from a Circle K convenience store.
You know, I used to have really bad headaches, and I was stressed, and I wasn't sleeping at night. Just because I needed to get back here and needed to figure out how to get back here.
Barbara's anxiety at the time was understandable. St. Bernard was as devastated by Katrina as any community in Louisiana. New Orleans was 80% flooded, a catastrophe, but at least one with slivers of dry land from which to launch rescue and rebuilding efforts. St. Bernard, by contrast, was totaled. The floods rendered the homes of nearly every one of its 68,000 residents uninhabitable, including Barbara's trailer. It took her over a year to get back home. Returning was difficult, but living in the midst of the destruction was worse. Barbara's family ended up living in a FEMA trailer with a friend for 2 months.
The depression was so bad, it got to the point where I was even contemplating suicide. I wouldn't even want to contemplate what would have happened to my life without Joycelyn.
Joycelyn is Joycelyn Heights, another lifelong resident of St. Bernard Parish. Like Barbara and so many of their neighbors, Heinz was displaced by Katrina, first to Kinder, Louisiana, then Picayune, Mississippi. When she finally returned to the parish 2 years after evacuating, she and her 2 daughters lived in a series of trailers.
We ended up getting a camper, and we had stretched out a hose because even the camper that I got, it didn't have any hot water. So we stretched out the hose for the hot water, and we kind of grilled on a grill because the oven didn't work, but it was home.
Heinz now lives in a tidy 2-bedroom house with her family in Araby.
So we had the trailer hooked up here. We had
her husband, Lewis, mows the lawn. There's a lot more grass in her neighborhood than there used to be. Of the 22 houses on her street 10 years ago, Heinz says only 5 have been fully rebuilt. Flood water reached the ceiling of her house.
The house down the street was actually in front of my house. So it floated down to and in the middle of the street.
Heinz was working part-time at a Walmart and going to school full-time when Katrina hit. She was in the process of purchasing what's now her home. The sale was underway in the summer of 2005, but again, the storm got in the way. Katrina interrupted the paperwork, and the insurance went to the seller.
So I was stuck with having a house that I couldn't even put back together. That's when I got with St. Bernard Project.
St. Bernard Project is the nonprofit started by Zach Rosenberg and Liz McCartney, a couple who moved from Washington, D.C. to help rebuild the parish after Katrina. Powered by donors and an army of hammer-wielding volunteers, SBP, as it's known, became the go-to contractor for parish residents. The organization offered free labor and materials to those who needed it, and a lot of people did, including Heinz.
When the volunteers were here, a lot of times I was able to at least meet with them before I went to school. And that gave me an opportunity to kind of share my story of what I went through. And I cried every single time and went in. I felt like that was my cleansing time. And then once I realized how much those volunteers were helping me out, I wanted to be a part of that.
In 2008, Joycelyn Heinz went from being a beneficiary to an employee of SBP. Her first job was as a liaison between the charity and St. Bernard residents. Locals were comforted to find a familiar face. The SBP team was otherwise filled with outsiders. Heinz connected easily with fellow storm victims who struggled through the rebuilding process. The memories contained in their ruined houses triggered emotions they'd suppressed. Some couldn't bring themselves to move back into their houses, even after they were fully rebuilt.
I know there were some people who moved or were about to move into their house and had trouble picking out paint colors, picking out furniture, just couldn't make decisions, which seems really simple and not that big of a deal, but they couldn't make decisions because they couldn't finalize this house for fear that they would lose the house. And if they finalized it, then they would really kind of commit to this house. And if they committed to it and lost it, they'd have to go through that heartache once again.
Dr. Michelle Moore is a clinical psychologist and clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at LSU Health Sciences Center. Dr. Moore started working with the St. Bernard Project in 2009. Heinz, with the help of Moore and others, created the Center for Wellness and Mental Health, a partnership between SBP and LSU. It provided a variety of free mental health services. That included therapy from trained clinicians like Dr. Moore.
Joycelyn didn't have any mental health experience. She'll be the first to tell you, I didn't know anything about, you know, what mental health treatment was or what went into that. But she learned about it along the way, you know, and she understood kind of confidentiality and privacy and, you know, how to treat patients when they walked in.
And again, Heinz is from St. Bernard, and she herself was still finding her way after the storm. A lot of people were still experiencing widespread emotional distress. Heinz says many were too proud to accept help.
People would say that, you know, we don't need mental health. If we can't deal with it ourselves, there's a bridge in on St. Claude and there's a bridge on Paris Road. You know, it's just more of we either handle it on our own or we'll do what we have to do. So, yeah, when it came time to seeing that they're going to take suicide over getting help, then that's a big issue.
Katrina, she knocked us down harder than the water came and destroyed your stuff. Mentally, we had no way of getting around it, understanding. Who do you blame? You know, whose fault is this?
Elizabeth Mahoney lives in Violet, a quiet town deep in the parish. Her story is well known in the community.
In January of 2009, in this home, my husband of 15 years shot me in the face 3 times and killed my 18-year-old daughter. She died that day.
Mahoney tracks her husband's decline to when they were stuck in Atlanta during Katrina. The experimental kidney medication he was taking was unavailable for months. She says his physical and mental health deteriorated as a result.
And his moods and his behavior started to become very, very erratic. So by the time we got home in November and got back to Ashna and everything, damage had been done. And he just never got better. I watched him change.
Mahoney's face had to be surgically reconstructed after being shot by her husband. She enlisted St. Bernard Project's help to repair her bullet-riddled home, and she visited the mental health clinic to try to repair herself. She went to the center without an appointment and sat, mostly silent, with Heinz.
We sat there for a whole week, and I never saw a counselor. I never registered. I never did anything. And at no point did she ever say, you can't come here without being a part of this.
In 2010, the center received a grant to hire a team of peer listeners, and Mahoney signed up to be one of these citizen shrinks. Regular St. Bernardians trained by licensed clinicians to go door to door and identify other locals who needed the clinic's services.
And once those people got to know us and to trust us, they would tell their family members to call us, and then we'd put them in touch with the clinic. Everything that we did as peer counselors was geared to helping people to break down that stigma that there was nothing wrong with getting mental health counseling. There was nothing wrong with admitting that you cannot do this by yourself.
Funding for the Wellness Center ran out at the end of 2012. Other options for mental health care have emerged in St. Bernard since then. But Heinz says she's still regularly approached by people who would benefit from the Wellness Center. As another Katrina anniversary approaches, she worries about her neighbors.
How many times have I shared my story? And certain things that come up will still impact me. And I'm sitting there saying, I'm a pretty strong person. But there's things that somebody may bring up that just, you know, gets me off. And I'll start, you know, getting emotional. Could you imagine somebody that has held their story in or probably had somebody pass and look back at that? You know, it was like my life before Katrina.
Thank you.
That was reporter Brett Anderson in St. Bernard Parish. St. Bernard Project is an ongoing concern. It opened outposts in the coastal areas hit by Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast, and the organization has spread locally into Orleans Parish. Finally on our show, I recently headed down to Bayou Du Large in Terrebonne Parish. That's where Wendy Belliot lives in Tiny Terrio. She's better known as the Bayou Woman, a blogger, author, radio host, and wetlands tour guide who wants to show insiders and outsiders what's happening to her swamp.
This is Captain Wendy Wilson Belliot. I'm down in Terrio, Louisiana on Bayou Du Large. And I'm the owner-operator of Wetland Tour and Guide Service, and today we're on an educational eco wetland tour. I'm ready. Let's roll. This is a very heavily used canal here. Charter fishing, but there's a large camp community out here, lots of family camps. People come out here and recreate, fish. There are a lot of duck camps out here in the winter, so this canal is used year-round for recreational and the oil industry.
And down where we are right now, this is kind of when they talk about the first line of defense with storms. This is that area, right?
This should not be that area. And where we sit, we're 21 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. So if there were 21 miles of healthy marsh between here and the Gulf, we should be able to withstand a 7-foot storm surge, because as a storm comes across healthy marsh, every 3 miles of healthy marsh, a storm surge could be reduced by 1 foot. So theoretically, a 7-foot surge should be absorbed down to nothing by the time it gets to our community. But you have to realize this has not always flooded. This has not always been a flood zone. We've only really begun to flood with, let's just say, Hurricane 3 storms in the 1980s. The first was Juan in 85 that put water in here. The second was Andrew in 92. Then again with Rita in 2005 and Ike in 2008. And what's significant is those last two storms made landfall, one almost on the edge of Texas, the other in Galveston. And this coastal part of Terrebonne Parish had a 9-foot surge. And so theoretically, by the time it got here, there should have only been 2 feet of water. My home was about 4 feet off the ground. I had a foot of water in my house. So we had about 5 feet of standing water in the yard. So if you could never even go out there and see the deteriorated marsh, you would know from the numbers, just from looking at the water, that there's nothing out there to protect us. The first line of defense in the Gulf is supposed to be the barrier islands, which some have been restored, some are being restored, and then they have to be maintained. They act as a speed bump, as it were. As the storm surge comes inland, then it passes over the bays next, which is supposed to slow the storm surge down some, and then it should hit the healthy marsh. So for thousands of years, the healthy marsh was a natural protective barrier for everything in here. You know, marine life, people, infrastructure, communities, homes, everything. And we no longer have that element. We don't have the barrier islands that we had once. We don't have the marsh that we once had. What we do have is a lot more open water. And open water just doesn't do a whole lot to slow down a storm surge. You have to put everything in perspective. You have to realize that these coastal wetlands have been inhabited for hundreds of years. These people did not settle in a floodplain. This hasn't always been a floodplain. And this has become a floodplain because of man-made causes. And when, again, I keep saying this number, 76% of the wetland loss is caused by canals dug by oil companies that have record-breaking profits, then why should the people who have been here for generations have to pick up and relocate? It is not that simple. First off, let's talk about relocation, because that's part of the master plan. That's a part they really don't focus on, is relocation, okay? If the majority of these coastal communities are commercial fishermen, if they're shrimpers, crabbers, oystermen, if they're even crawfishing to the extent that they can be as close to the coast as they can, because that's fresh water, but there are some, and rice farmers. There is no place else in the country that these people can pick up and relocate and do what they do. The most economical thing to do is allow them to stay where they are and elevate them above the floodplain. It just makes sense to me. Don't make a sellout and relocate, but slowly, again, another example of the frog in the boiling pot. They're closing elementary schools in the lower bayou communities. They're closing the little satellite post offices in the lower bayou communities. The grocery stores, that's private industry, but once a grocery store is flooded two or three times, they may not have had enough insurance to cover their losses. They're not rebuilding, so now we don't have a grocery store. So then we become a food desert, because if you can't catch it and you can't grow it, you've got to drive 30 minutes to Houma to buy it. Okay, so if you can't catch and grow and hunt enough to sustain yourself, now you're dependent on this community 20 miles away for your sustenance. So you have to, in perspective, you have to take all of those things into consideration and say, I think we as coastal community residents are victims. I think we're victims of the oil industry. I really do. And no, they haven't caused all the loss, but they're responsible for a big portion of it.
That's a little blue heron.
People who come to New Orleans, or live and let live, they want to come, they want to have a good time, they want to see things, they want to be entertained. They don't want to be burdened with our plight. And I had several tell me that.
Really?
Yes. People don't want to know all that. People just want to come out and see gators and have a good time. And the thing is, after doing this for 8 years now, when I hear myself saying the same things over and over and over, you know, it can really get depressing, because every time I go out, I tell people, we don't have any marsh to protect us anymore, and next, you know, hurricane that makes landfall to the west of us, we're going to have another storm surge and we're going to flood, because it is a given. It is a fact.
Yeah, right. Huh. Do you find yourself getting depressed?
I'm pretty resilient, pretty tenacious, and so just, it's the nature of the beast. It's a choice we make to stay here, but you can see why we stay. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
That was Wendy Billiott. She gives eco tours of the wetlands around her home in Terrebonne Parish. You can learn more about Wendy and her tours at bayouwoman.com. Time to call it a show for this edition of All Things New Orleans. This program is a production of WWNO News. Thanks to Kate Richardson and Lane Kaplan-Levinson for their help this week. Janet Wilson, you'll be missed at WWNO, but I'm glad we'll be seeing and laughing with you around town still. I'm your host, Jesse Hardman. Captain Jack Hopke will be back navigating the radio seas next week. Until then, stay cool and enjoy your city, New Orleans. Broadcasting in HD from the University of New Orleans, this is 89.9 WWNO New Orleans, 90.5 KTLN Thibodeau Houma, New Orleans Public Radio, serving Southeast Louisiana.